Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Often on this program, Rich Fisher brings you into the world of arts, literary, visual, structural, and of course, musical. When I have the privilege of sitting in his chair, I'm trying to bring you closer to the worlds of healthcare and medical science. Today, I have the pleasure of bringing our worlds together. Last year, at an annual conference on medical ethics at the McLean Center of the University of Chicago, I heard a spellbinding talk by a doctor named David Schiedermeier. Titled, Just Me and My Harp, Lessons from a Lifetime of Ethics and Palliative Care Consultation and Harmonica Playing, Dr. Schiedermeier looked back on his career as an internist and later as a palliative care specialist, the kind of doctor who cares for people in great suffering, usually near the end of life. What made his memoir special was the addition of his harmonica playing, which was both uplifting and haunting, as he tied together musical themes with the stories of patients, their families, their suffering, and their triumphs. Schiedermeier lives in Appleton, Wisconsin, where he's long been a teacher at the Medical College of Wisconsin and been providing palliative care at a medical center in Neenah. He's authored or edited 9 books, among them such titles as Practical Ethics, Putting the Soul Back in Medicine, and House Calls, Rounds and Healing, a Poetry Casebook. David Schiedermeier is our guest today for Studio Tulsa on Health. David Schiedermeier, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. You are a palliative care physician. Tell us, you know, how you got interested in palliative medicine.
I became interested in palliative care because I realized that I wanted a new paradigm. I wanted something different. And usual medical care aims at discovering things or uncovering things. And palliative care, the word pall or pall, casting a pall over the proceedings, means to cover something. So it's a whole different approach. When someone is short of breath in palliative care, we don't try to be detectives anymore. We try to help them feel better. And it's just a refreshing change for me at my somewhat advanced age.
So did you go into palliative medicine early on right away, or were you sort of a quote-unquote regular diagnostic physician beforehand and then eventually segued into this?
Yes, the latter. I really felt I was a general internist at first and did some ethics at the University of Chicago with Mark Siegler, and I worked at the medical school in Milwaukee at the Medical College of Wisconsin and taught medicine, and I just enjoyed it very much. But when I got into my 50s, I thought, let's try something different. And I always say to young physicians, please don't whine about being a doctor. Don't complain. You've got a tremendous career. You can change things up. You're really fortunate to be able to do different things. And in my career, I was a teacher in the clinic, then I was a hospitalist for a while, and now I'm doing palliative care. I just enjoy it as a real change, but most of all because I think the patients are terrific.
You talk about having the ability to shift roles and do different things, and you know, one way in which that's clearly manifest with you is music. And I guess I wonder, how did you channel really your work or your poetry or your art into your music?
I've always enjoyed playing the harmonica. It's such a wonderful little instrument. I happen to have one right here, and the one thing that's interesting about it is it's deceptively easy to play and yet really hard to play. So I always compare it to doing medicine. Let me just play the different. I've got a 10-hole harmonica here, the kind that everybody maybe has in their drawer, and I'll just play going up the notes. And anybody that's a musician will recognize all the gaps that are in there, all the unusual twists and turns, the kind of inversion of the notes as you get higher. And I always say that's just like you and I as people. We have lots of limitations and quirks. And if you can learn to play the harmonica, you can kind of learn to live with your quirks.
Well, so has it been a lifelong avocation playing harmonica, or was it something that you got more invested in as you got further along in your career?
I think many people in palliative care would honestly tell you that we do need creative outlets outside of our work, not because we're trying to escape it, but because we sometimes just need a way to express what we see. And music, of course, is a great way to express what you've seen.
So do you wind up writing your own music, or do you cover other songs?
Both. My son, John, is a wonderful musician, and he writes his own music, and he's encouraged me to do more writing. But I also think that there's so many beautiful songs that have been written and so much beautiful music that you can feel good either way, playing someone else's song or playing your own song. So either way, it's kind of like reading a book helps writing books. Writing is, of course, creative too. Totally different enterprises.
How often do you get a chance to play?
I try to play. You know, I always tell people that you should play the harmonica. It's just like practicing medicine. You've got to keep playing. And I tell them, for example, one way with a harmonica you can get chords is by putting your tongue over the two or three middle holes and playing the edges. And I always tell people that's like having a family meeting. There's different notes, but they're all related. So, for example, here's a chord. So there's, you can see that those edges are there. Or you can leave the middle in. But just to have the edges is so great.
How do you manufacture those different sounds? Is it with, do you use your tongue to block the middle holes or the...
You do. You can use the, first a little bit about the history of a harmonica. It's the most popular instrument in the world. There's over a billion, with a B, harmonicas around, but it doesn't get much respect. But the cowboys and the campfire harmonica, they would play that in the first, what we call the first position, which is just simple chording. Nothing wrong with this. It's a beautiful, straight way to play the harmonica, straightforward and nice chords. But the African-American contribution was to inhale on the harmonica. There was an instrument in Africa that you played by inhaling, and that gives a whole different approach, and really, it's probably why the harmonica is still around today, because you get the blues. So that reminds me how it would feel like if you were waking up in your hospital room all alone and you look at the clock and it's 2 in the morning, then it's 3 in the morning, and you're awake all night so far from home, alone in your hospital room, and you know you're dying. And that's the song I think of, that riff. That was by George Harmonica Smith, played that. And I always think that riff, it makes you wonder how you're going to get back home again. And what do you take with you? You know, how do you prepare to go back home? And I always tell people, I think, you know, it's a good idea, for example, to take your harmonica with you when you're going home. I say, just put a harmonica in your casket. Why not? Take it with you. A lot of my dying patients want to know what they should take with them, what they should leave behind. And of course, I'm speaking metaphorically, but a lot of what dying is about trying to get back home somehow. And I remember a man I took care of over at Cherry Meadows, which is our hospice, and he didn't go easily. He would linger day after day, you know, on the edge of consciousness and on the edge of death. And his son, who was a bearded Harley type, would always come and sit with us at the bedside. And he told us one time, the whole family was there, he said, you know, I went out to the crossroads at the cemetery last night. And he said, I stood over Mom's grave and I asked her to come and get Dad. And then I stood over our brother's grave and said, come on and get Dad. And everybody listened to his story. And I remember his sister saying, what? You asked Mom and our brother Tom, but you didn't ask God. You got to ask God. And he said, you know, I couldn't. I didn't know where God is over there at the cemetery. He said, besides, I figured God would know. Well, I didn't even have any words for that scene, John. I just looked down at the... I suppose I should have said, your dad's dying as fast as he can. But I just looked down at the floor, and I try to imagine that scene. It's almost like a blues scene down at the crossroads. And I'm really often speechless, but it does come out in music later on.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Our guest today, David Schiedermeier, who's a palliative care physician at Ada Clark Hospital in Neenah, Wisconsin. And he takes care of people at the end of life, helping manage their symptoms and also easing the dying process, and channels a lot of the emotion of his work into music. And David, you were talking about the blues and how the harmonica, which is also known as the blues harp, really gives you an opportunity. I wonder, do you ever play music or blues for family members or for patients themselves?
I do, only if asked, because they can't get away. You know, they're stuck in the room. So, but I did have the opportunity to play a wedding over at the hospice that was arranged very last minute. They didn't have anybody to do music. Literally, it was arranged last minute. And so they, I remember they asked me to play, and I said, I'd love to play. I'd be glad to play. I play the accordion, which, of course, is just a big harmonica. It works the same in and out, the button box especially. And they said to me, I remember the minister said to me, "Do you know Here Comes the Bride?" And of course, I didn't. I'd never played it before in my life, but I said, I could play it. And so I had about a half hour to practice. And fortunately for me, Here Comes the Bride works out so easily on the accordion. You just have to do a couple buttons. Etc. I was really inspired, so actually I played it really well. Unfortunately, it's a very small chapel over at the hospice, so I only had to play. And it was a great honor and so much fun. So yes, I will play if asked. But I don't force my music on anybody. And actually, one thing I learned, I don't know if you remember that old film, The Doctor, William Hurt. One of the great things that doctor learned from being ill himself and having cancer, he kind of had an epiphany and became much less of a self-centered person. And he learned that instead of playing his music in the operating room, he would try to find out what the patient liked and have that be the background music. So I do really believe in music and music therapy, but I guess we need to play what the patient wants to hear. Sometimes I have patients that are musicians, and I insist that the family goes and gets their music and brings it and puts it on in the background. And I do think I've seen them smile when they hear their own music.
You were telling us about a patient who was taking a long time, as it were, to die from a terminal condition, and how you felt his son was really at a crossroads. And I was wondering, that seems like a very long-standing theme of when I think back in the blues, like to Robert Johnson, who supposedly, I guess, sold his soul to the devil at a crossroads so he could become a great blues guitarist. Do you have any riffs on the crossroads?
I do. I'm a huge fan of Robert Johnson. I think he just revolutionized and started so much. And so, of course, I always study pictures of him. They're not many, but there's some. And when I teach classes about ethics and the blues comes up, or ethics comes up about how much to practice, how much to work, I always say, have you ever looked closely at a picture of Robert Johnson's, you know, and his guitar? And I show them the picture, and Robert Johnson's sitting there dressed, everything about him is well-groomed and new, except his guitar, which is completely worn out, where you play, you know, down by the strings, down by where you have your hand. It's like a Willie Nelson guitar. And I always say, the word is he sold his soul to the devil, but actually, he practiced like crazy. And so I say, you know, again, that's part of medicine, is to keep practicing. But let me tell you more about that story. So the next morning on rounds, I go in, and I sense that something's different in the room. And as I stand in the doorway, I sense that death has moved in before me, slipping in the door just ahead of me. And the man's eyes are already distant. His breathing stops. As I move toward his bed, I feel the room get kind of colder, and I hear this humming sound. I'm sure I'm imagining it. But I always say that death is like a whispering wind that sweeps away. And it's so much more dramatic in real life than in any movie. And there is his family keeping vigil, but this time they're all silent. There's no kind of joking around. They're just shocked by the actual power of death. So people sometimes ask me if what I think about is to make this death become easier when you're a palliative care physician. Then I always ask them the rhetorical question. This is a poet's question. Are we children of the sun or children of the earth? Because if you will answer me this one simple question, then I will tell you what to think about death. And frankly, I'll tell you what to take with you, what to leave behind, and how to pack for that kind of a trip, and how to prepare for going home again. So, you know, I still think if you were to pack a harmonica with you in your casket, like my Uncle Jarvie did, that'd be a really good idea. But still, it would have its limits, you know. But who's to say who's to say what to take with you and why not a harmonica? In fact, maybe accordions, maybe your whole bagpipe collection. That'd be the less of them here for the rest of us. So, I know Jarvie, we actually put a really good harmonica in there. It was a good one.
So you mentioned teaching medical ethics to young doctors, really to medical students. And so I'm wondering how your art, your music, and your poetry informs the way you teach. Do you use music and poetry as texts to demonstrate broader or universal themes about suffering, illness, or decision-making to medical students?
I do. One of my favorite thoughts about what to take with you and what to leave and how to make decisions about medical ethics really relates to a concept about that we call call and response. And call and response, let me just illustrate it with, for example, knocking on heaven's door. Call and response is responding to another musical line with a follow-up line. So this would be Knocking on Heaven's Door by Dylan. And then the response might be, so I always tell a story about a woman who was in the ICU on a ventilator, and she said she had told her family she wanted to die. She didn't want to be a burden, but she also told them she didn't want to die today. So I remember we were all around her bed talking to her, the nurse, her son, her daughter, and the nurse said to her, "Do you want to go back home to be with God again?" And I just thought that was such an odd thing to say, just kind of theologically or just a kind of a strange thing to say again, back with God again. And somehow it was the right question for her. It was like going back home. And so to me, the call and response in that situation is if you're there as a doctor or a nurse or some other type of health professional, your job is to, what do musicians say, rest and be quiet. Listen while someone else is playing, even if those questions aren't the ones you would ask, even if they don't even make sense to you necessarily. Sometimes a call and response is waiting to hear what the patient will say and then echoing it back. So one might say, if someone says, "I don't want to die today," you might say something like, "So dying today is really not what you want." And I mean, it's not a cheap psychology. It's not, you know, something like Bob Newhart psychology or something. It's call and response. It's waiting. It's echoing it back and waiting for the response. And it's actually a quite effective medical technique to really determine what to do, you know, in a situation. So in a medical ethical situation, it's really honoring the voice of the patient. So for this person, the answer is take her off the ventilator, but not today. Some other day, maybe tomorrow or the next day. Not today. She's afraid to die today. I mean, she's knocking on heaven's door, but she's doesn't want to die today.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Our guest today, David Schiedermeier, a palliative care physician who works at Ada Clark Hospital and is also affiliated with the Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He helps people who are suffering near the end of life, or helps family members cope with dying loved ones. And he has beautifully, I think, translated some of the emotion involved in caring for individuals near the end of life into his music. And he presented last year in Chicago a talk called Just Me and My Harp, Lessons from a Lifetime of Ethics and Palliative Care Consultation and Harmonica Playing. And I want to circle back to your music and ask if you can be sort of typed. That is, do you would you say that much of the harmonica or accordion music you play is more in the sense of sadness about people dying because of your line of work? Is it more of a blues because of the sort of emotional feelings of those that are left behind, or those, as you have said articulately, that are looking to go back home? Or is it really all kinds of styles that you play merely to kind of use that energy and express yourself?
I don't know quite how to answer that. It's a great question, and I think I try to read music theory books some and keep learning, and I think one of the writers was really wise, and he said there's really all of it has something to teach us. There's no music that's not helpful to us and that we can't learn from. So I have no preference. I like Americana music, I guess, and I like anything that tells a story. But my dad was kidding me the other day, and he said, you're writing a song about Ebola. He said, no one's going to listen to that. Write a love song. So, you know, we really get that. We get that. But I just want to tell you a little story about, since I talked about Dylan, and I really liked, he always played, by the way, in the first position, the most basic, because he had his harmonica on a rack, and that's, when you have it in front of you like that, it's hard to really inhale on it and really work it. So he was doing a lot of straightforward playing. But one thing about him that I often teach the students about too is that he only needed three or four little notes. That's all he'd play, and it was the right ones, and it was enough. So it was kind of like his words. And I'm always reminded about a patient we had here. He told his wife and family he was just going out for a couple of beers, and he did, but then he fell off a bar stool, and actually he broke his neck, and actually severe head injury. And then I remember that I was called to see him, and the family was in shock. You know, the last they heard from him, as he told his wife, I'm just going out for a couple of beers, and now he's in the ICU, not expected to live. But and when you think of the song Mr. Tambourine Man, remember he says, and so this man's paralyzed, you know, and then so I always think of that song and Mr. Tambourine Man. What I like about the words for this particular person, that song says, in the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you. Take me on a trip upon your magic swirling ship. My senses have been stripped. My hands can't feel to grip. My toes too numb to step. Wait only for my boot heels to be wandering. I'm ready to go anywhere. I'm ready for to fade into my own parade. Cast your dancing spell my way. I promise to go under it. So I remember writing in his chart, you know, that he was dying a natural death, and I had to chuckle to myself. I really did, because I meant to write like a natural Wisconsin death, because in Wisconsin we're kind of like hobbits, both the good and the bad. You know, we're true and innocent souls, and we die from drinking too much beer. So I remember in that case, I gave him a couple hours head start with morphine and Ativan and a scopolamine patch, which decreases secretions. And then I took him off the ventilator, and his family members were there crying at the bedside. But in our hospital, we have an OB floor, just one floor away from the ICU. And I remember I was kind of keeping my feelings inside like a clown with sad eyes, you know. But then I found myself smiling at a young man and woman when they stepped in the hospital elevator, and they'd just gotten out of the OB ward. And I saw that they had this newborn curly-haired baby tucked in their car seat. And I thought, boy, it has such long hair, kind of like curly hobbit hair. And I thought, maybe this is a future Wisconsinite replacing the one that we just lost. So when the door opened, they walked out, I just was kind of like a ragged clown skipping quietly behind. So I think sometimes that songs take on new meaning in new situations. You know, the words kind of meant something new to me when I had this patient that was paralyzed. And, you know, here's the words: my senses have been stripped, my hands can't feel to grip, my toes too numb to step. So Dylan's really describing someone that's paralyzed, but here metaphorically, but for me it was real. I mean, he literally was paralyzed and had terminal brain damage from his fall.
Well, David Schiedermeier, thank you so much for sharing your stories with us. I really like the way you put your experiences to music, and it's just such a treat and a delight.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure and honor. Thank you.
David Schiedermeier is a palliative care physician at Ada Clark Hospital in Neenah, Wisconsin. He's also a faculty member at the Medical College of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. And you got to hear him play both the accordion and the harmonica here at Studio Tulsa on Health. Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa on Health is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.
The University of Tulsa welcomes the Greater Tulsa community to a wide array of athletic events, artistic performances, exhibitions, academic lectures, and symposia held on campus. Our public events are open to all. Requests for accommodation of disabilities may be directed to Dr. Tawny Taylor at 918-631-2315. To ensure availability of an interpreter, 5 to 7 days' notice is needed. 48 hours is recommended for all other accommodations.